7:05 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford and Brough, Sportsnet 650. It's the all Justin hour here on the Halford and Brough Show. Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation, followed by Justin Bourne, Sportsnet NHL analyst. That's all coming up in the 7 o'clock hour.
Sure, you got that order right?
I do. We're going to talk to Justin Dunk first. We will then talk to Justin Bourne second. While they share a first name, totally different people. I will not make that mistake again. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dulari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dulari difference today by visiting your nearest Dulari Acura dealer today. To the phone lines we go to discuss the breakout star of the early parts of this Canadian Football League season, the quarterback of your British Columbia Lions, of course, and Victoria native Nathan Rourke. Joining us to discuss all this and more from Three Down Nation, Justin Dunk here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Doing well, fellas. What about you guys?
We're good, thanks. We're kind of trying to get caught up and get up to speed with the Nathan Rourke story, only because it has exploded in such a significant way in such a short period of time. So before we get into this, a quick anecdote. After the week one thrashing of the Elks, a listener texted into our show and said, so do we need to be worried about the NFL poaching Nathan Rourke? And we laughed and we're like, hey, come on, let's not go there already. Then we waited 2 weeks, and now apparently it's happening. So the piece at Three Down Nation is titled, Rourke Captures Attention Around North America, Including NFL Personnel People. You're the author on this one. Can you give our listeners a sense of what was going on here?
Yeah, the NFL has already taken notice on Nathan Rourke, and they had the background information on him because of his career at Ohio University. And when he came out in his NFL draft year, there were some scouts that kind of questioned his height and could he fill out a little bit, and we want him to maybe be a little bit more athletic. But with what he's done in these first two starts, his first time being a full-time starter in the CFL, it's caused NFL personnel people to sit up in their seats and pay attention. Now, we'll see how this continues in terms of the season. He's still obviously got 16 regular season games left, so he needs to continue stacking great film. But just based on these first two games, Rourke now has the attention of NFL personnel people based on what he's done, guys, because it's ultra rare for, you know, essentially a rookie starter to do this well in the CFL, regardless of what it says on your birth certificate.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but when Rourke worked out in the NFL, and we had him on our show to discuss this, NFL teams almost were considering a position change, correct? Like they were thinking about making him a tight end?
That's right. When he worked out with the New York Giants, it was more as an athlete and a receiver,
right.
Is what they were looking at him as.
Okay, so how big a story is this right now? Because we're trying to get a scope beyond British Columbia and get a sense of where this is playing across the league. If I go to Three Down Nation right now, I mean, there are multiple Nathan Rourke stories up there. And fair enough, he's been the most outstanding offensive player in two of the 3 weeks that the league's been up and running. Just how big is this? How much should we get excited about the hype without going too overboard on the hype?
I don't think we can go overboard right now based on his first two starts. Now, he's not necessarily going to throw for 400 yards and four touchdowns every game, but hey, maybe he can. Maybe he's a guy that raises the bar, especially for Canadian quarterbacks in this league. And we could tell by the traffic on 3downnation.com that the people want to read about Nathan Rourke. They want to watch him on TV. He edged out the Saskatchewan Roughriders last week for the highest rated CFL game in week three, which is rare. Usually the Rough Riders are the gold standard in terms of TV ratings. So it's clear that across the country, not just people in BC, fans want to see Rourke no matter what he does. And what also stood out to me, guys, was the fact that that TV number carried throughout a blowout. It's
right.
Clear that they want to see Rourke and what he's doing drive in and drive out, at least to start the season.
How much of the factor has to do with that he's Canadian?
That's certainly a big factor because we haven't really seen a start like this in terms of a CFL season and setting records since Russ Jackson. That's who Rourke has already broke a couple of his records, and Jackson is watching closely along with a number of other Canadian quarterbacks, you know, be it from the older days or more recent times. I know Brandon Bridge has been tuned in. He's been on social media and tweeting about it. And Bridge himself feels a sense of pride because he was the one to really push the rule forward to have a Canadian quarterback who's a starter count towards the ratio, which it always should have been. So the Canadian factor is definitely a major one driving this star that's like a shooting star, guys. It's going crazy.
How expected or maybe unexpected is this? Like when you guys were doing your season previews at Three Down Nation, I'm sure no one predicted that Nathan Rourke would break the Canadian passing record in week three. But how was this somewhat expected, not expected at all? Where did it fall in the prism there for you guys?
Personally, for myself, I felt like Nathan Rourke would be a successful starter just based on knowing him for a number of years. I mean, going all the way back to Oakville Trinity before he went down to finish his high school career at Alabama. Then he went to a junior college, Ohio University. Through all those years, I felt like he was a guy whose demeanor never changed. He was mature beyond his years, and that's shown through in his prep work with the Lions going into the season. Rick Campbell has talked about it. Gary Peters was saying that he spends so much time in the facility, he doesn't leave. He's walking around there eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, getting ready for games. So I think it's about what we don't see, but I really felt like he would be successful. Not, of course, to the level that he has in the first two games, throwing for 7 touchdowns, no picks, leading the CFL in terms of passing yards per game. But I felt like he had the demeanor to be a guy who could be a franchise quarterback in the CFL. And we'll see if it happens down the road in terms of him getting an NFL shot.
Is he the best quarterback in the CFL right now, not just because of the first 2 weeks' production, but just overall in terms of talent and ability and ceiling?
Well, certainly he's been the best quarterback in the first 2 weeks of the season, bar none. But if you're going to look at ability, passing the football, and running the football as well, he needs to have a bigger frame of work, right? You have guys in this league like a Bolivar Mitchell who's won 2 Grey Cups, won 2 MLPs, has put complete seasons together multiple times. Cody Fajardo has played at a high caliber level for 2 seasons. Zach Caleros is a reigning MLP, had a great season in his, oh, by the way, the quarterback of the 2-time defending Grey Cup champ. So Rourke still has to continue to stack games and then seasons together, if he's even in the CFL for multiple seasons, to get in the conversation with those guys long term. But right now, he's played the best out of any quarterback to start the season.
We're speaking to Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Let's safely assume that Rourke is the biggest story through the first 3 weeks of the CFL season. What story, maybe that we haven't paid attention to or is percolating there, would rival that in terms of the biggest development over the first few weeks of the Canadian Football League campaign?
Ooh, there's a couple ways you can go here, but for me, it's Bo Levi Mitchell and the Calgary Stampeders being 3-0. Mitchell played his best game in, I think, a few years in week three, throwing for over 300 yards, 21 of 28 in terms of completions. And he looks good, has the bye week now to rest up and deal with some of that soreness. It caused him to be a game-time decision for that start up at home against the Elks. And I think Mitchell is up there in terms of one of the biggest storylines because a lot of people were questioning, does he still have it? Can he play at a high level? I don't necessarily think he'll get back to those gunslinging days because of that shoulder injury he suffered in 2019 and how he's been dealing with it since. But the fact that he's playing at a high level in terms of his completion rate, what he's doing with the offense in terms of putting up a bunch of points, they're averaging over 30 a game, makes Calgary a legitimate West Division favorite in my mind because they've done it so many times with Mitchell and head coach Dave Dickinson.
And finally, the Lions are back in action this weekend against the Ottawa Redblacks. Now, I look at this and I say Ottawa had 17 points in the first game of the season, 12 in their second game of the season, and now they're coming up against the Lions defense, which we haven't talked about yet, but only gave up 3 points to the Argos last week. So set the stage for us here, Lions, Red Blacks this weekend.
It'll be the toughest test of the season in my mind for Nathan Rourke, going on the road, coming to the Eastern time zone. We know about the time change and how it messes with teams going both ways. I think that was a factor in the Lions thrashing the Argos last week, but you alluded to it, that Lions defense maybe hasn't gotten a lot of attention because of how well Rourke has done and the records that Rourke has broken. On the flip side, with the Red Blacks, they played Winnipeg back-to-back to open the season, and everybody felt like they were going to come out of there 0-2 based on the season that Ottawa had last year that was so poor. But really, Ottawa could have easily won both of those games, and they put up a fight. Jeremiah Masoli looks very comfortable in that offense. And with Ottawa coming off the bye, having that extra time to scheme it up against Rourke and the BC Lions and playing at home, it's going to be a difficult task. It'll be very impressive if on a short week, Rourke can go in there and dice up that defense, because it's a pretty solid one led by the defensive coordinator there, Mike Benavides, who is, of course, a former Lions head coach and Grey Cup winner out there.
Well, I sure hope the Lions can get a win in Ottawa. I sure hope they don't have a letdown, because Saturday, July 9th, at BC Place, BC hosts Winnipeg. And this could be the type of game that the BC Lions have been waiting for a long time. Just the hype around Winnipeg and being a 3-0 team. Hopefully the Lions are. Are the Bombers still the class of the league?
In my mind, they are, for the fact that they're the two-time defending Grey Cup champs, and also the fact that they're 3-0. And especially in those first two games, really, I felt like they played B football. That's the grade that I would give them against Ottawa, and they found a way to win. That's what this team has done over the last two CFL seasons, to hoist the Grey Cup at the end of the year. So they can play mediocre football, which would be pretty good for a lot of these teams around the league, and still win football games. And we saw the offense start to turn the corner. Caleros threw for over 300 yards against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. That defense is so dominant, and I still think it's the best unit in the CFL right now until proven otherwise.
Lions in action tomorrow. I kind of alluded to this weekend, but I guess maybe we can count tomorrow as the weekend. Anyway, tomorrow, the 2-0 BC Lions, 0-2 Ottawa Red Blacks. That is a 4:30 kickoff our time. Justin, thanks a lot for doing this today, bud. We really appreciate it. Enjoy all the CFL action this weekend. We'll do this again real soon.
You bet, fellas. Sounds good.
Thank you. That's Justin Dunk. Justin Dunk from 3 Down Nation here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So a couple things of a takeaway there. The one that really sticks out is the Nathan Rourke train building a lot of momentum, running at full capacity. It'll be really interesting to see what happens if it continues. I'll just go house of positivity here. If he comes out for a third consecutive week and puts up ridiculous numbers, or just has another really, really good outing, moving the team to 3-0, where you got to remember the completion percentage is super high. He's not turning the ball over. He's not getting sacked a lot. He's not fumbling the ball. He just looks like a weapon, a unit, as the kids like to say out there. How much more the hype train will roll on, especially now, two games in to the season, we're already talking about NFL exposure.
I want to touch quickly on a story that you kind of brought up with Wish, but Wish was like, hey, man, I've been focusing on the Stanley Cup final. I've been there and I've been covering it. But you did mention that corporate Canada is really starting to put the pressure on Hockey Canada. Mm-hmm. Why don't you recap what has happened so far, and then how that could affect the World Juniors in August, which, of course, the tournament was postponed until this point. They played a few games of it, then realized we shouldn't be doing this, and they postponed it till August. Since then, this Hockey Canada story has really blown up.
Sure. So the corporate dominoes are starting to fall for Hockey Canada after the settled lawsuit stemming from the 2018 sexual assault controversy situation, whatever wording you want to use there. According to a letter from Scotiabank President CEO Brian Porter yesterday, Scotiabank has paused sponsorship of Hockey Canada. That was then followed up by a similar sentiment from the Canadian Tire organization. All these courtesy of Katie Strang of The Athletic, who's working on this story for The Athletic. This morning, Katie tweeted out news of a third major sponsor, this time TELUS, pausing its sponsorship, not just of the Hockey Canada program, but them being a title sponsor of the World Juniors. Obviously, if you watch the World Juniors on television, you'll know that TELUS advertising is front and center on a lot of the different things that they do. That is three major corporations that have all, within the last 24 hours, made a very public and very prominent move to pause their partnership with Hockey Canada.
And this is a very low point for Hockey Canada in the history of whichever association has been in charge of hockey in Canada. It hasn't always been called Hockey Canada. We don't want to get into the whole history, but if you look back on some of the things that have affected Hockey Canada, like the first one that comes to mind is probably the brawl that they had at the World Juniors back in 1987. That was a bit of a crisis moment for Hockey Canada. This is far more serious than that.
Yes.
And it's going to be interesting to see how well the World Juniors are supported this summer in Edmonton from both a fan perspective and from a sponsor perspective, because don't forget, Hockey Canada uses these World Juniors, especially when they're hosted in Canada, to make money.
Yes.
But they very much rely on these tournaments, and it was already going to be a tough sell with this being in the summer, and people are kind of like, yeah, the World Juniors, they're more of like a Boxing Day thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to be into that. The biggest seller for the tournament is that Connor Bedard is playing in it.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other really good prospects, right? Like Shane Wright is probably going to play for Canada. Like, it's going to be, as far as World, if you put the actual tournament in a vacuum, like, you ignore it's being played in summer, you ignore that that Hockey Canada has this major crisis going on right now, the tournament is quite compelling. I just don't know if people are going to be into it from a ticket buying perspective. And Hockey Canada right now must be in serious financial difficulties.
Yes, and I think also in serious difficulty as it comes to their public perception. Because right now, and I'll talk about this very transparently, and I know that we're talking about another broadcast, another company, the other side of the road, whatever, but quite honestly, if you're behind, and there's two stakeholders in this primarily, Hockey Canada, obviously, because not only is it a revenue generator for them, it's also a chance to, for lack of a better term, show off their program, right? It's to lionize what it means to be a junior player at this tournament and why all the kids wake up on Boxing Day morning and want to be on the Canadian Junior.
Wear the maple leaf on your chest,
et cetera. I'll leave that at that. The other stakeholder, obviously, is TSN, who has to go, and traditionally, it's been a very formulaic paint-by-numbers approach because it worked. You lionize these players, the communities that they come from, and a lot of it is small-town Canadiana, and the junior teams that they represent, and then how they get to be on this big international stage. So wherever you're from in Canada, now you're at the forefront. The entire country is not only watching you, but supporting you. That is going to be a very difficult thing to do given the current climate. And I don't know what the answer is, but I know what the problems will be if they try and present this in the usual format, way, shape, and form.
I'd love to hear from the listeners on this. Are you going to be into the World Juniors this summer? I mean, on the one hand, we've got all this stuff that we just talked about. But on the other hand, there's not much else going on in terms of sports this summer. Mm-hmm. There's no World Cup. There's no Euros. There's baseball, obviously, but there's always baseball.
There's a reason they did this tournament and redid it where they did, when they did. It's because you said it wasn't an ideal scenario, but at the same time, they could always fall back on, well, there's not a lot else going on. At least we'll have people's attention. We had someone text already in this morning talking about how slow things are right now. And they're like, just get me to the World Juniors, because people are interested in it for, and make this clear, removing everything aside and existing in a vacuum, it's a tournament where you would get to see Connor Bedard and Shane Wright play for Canada and try and win. And that is something that the pure sports part of it,
yeah,
you can't deny that. But it's going to be very difficult to have the pure sports part of it and nothing else.
Well, I just wonder, and again, this is hard sometimes to speak of another network, but TSN has done a terrific job with the World Juniors, bringing them up to what they are right now, the importance of them in the country's sporting landscape. Let's be honest, they've done a terrific job. And they've gotten it to the point now where it's a big deal in Canada. Mm-hmm. And when you have a scandal like this involving Hockey Canada and involving that World Junior team, it's none of the guys that are on the team right now, but it's the World Junior team. That's a big deal. And I wonder how they're going to approach that from a broadcasting perspective, because you can't just go into the tournament and be like, you know, ignore it. You have to address it. It's kind of like, you know, a PGA Tour tournament. The broadcast has to address the LIV Golf situation, right?
So I'm glad
that
you,
sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because you asked for texts into the Dunbar Lumber text line, a reminder that's 650-650, about this from the listeners. Two separate texts, one from Gary and one from Jared Langley, came in almost instantaneously saying, the kids playing this summer have done nothing wrong. The kids didn't work that hard to get there for someone else to ruin it. Those are valid points. I feel awful for any of the Canadian junior kids currently in the program that did nothing other than work the tails off to make this team that they've long dreamed of.
Yeah, for sure.
Not only did it get punted from the traditional Boxing Day where you get to experience what all the juniors before you got to experience. It's an awful situation from that regard.
Other people will feel differently, though. Other people will say, I don't want to cheer for a team that clearly is playing for an organization that has a rotten culture.
Yeah, I just feel like...
You can disagree with that point. You can fully disagree with that.
Yeah,
but this is the tournament. What you can't do, and what's just like immature or childish, is to cover your ears and scream, "Go Canada, go! Go Canada, go!" It doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me.
Yeah, and I think this is where we talk about like the partisanship and the whataboutism. Just because I say one thing on the air doesn't mean I'm not cognizant of the other. And then when I talk about the other, doesn't mean I'm cognizant or forgetting about the thing that I. Not cognizant or forgetting about the thing I talked about earlier. Like it's a very
listen, guys.
Very complex conversation.
We're gonna watch it. We're gonna talk about the tournament. I'm excited to see Connor Bedard play.
Mm-hmm.
He's a terrific player. He could be the next phenom in the NHL. I'm gonna watch him play, but I'm also gonna acknowledge that this tournament could be held under very unique and somewhat dark. Not somewhat, like very dark circumstances. I'm wondering if anything will happen between now and the start of the tournament in August that can give just the idea that steps are being taken.
Sure.
I wonder if anyone will be held to account by then. Mm-hmm. That's what people are upset about, right? That at the end of the day, most people are upset about this is because something happened. Hockey Canada settled a lawsuit. But none of the players involved have been held to account.
And I think that's...
They've been protected.
And I think that's next. I really do think that's next. Because Rick Westhead has stuff out right now on social media, on his Twitter account. There's continual digging and there's continual pressure. And digging and pressure usually get to the bottom of the story, or at least the bottom that the stakeholders are interested in reaching. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's a lot of different... There's a lot of different... angles of the dig going into Hockey Canada right now that they're probably going to have to do a heck of a lot more than they have. The idea that they were going to settle and hope that this goes away clearly isn't going to happen.
A text in, can't I address and acknowledge it and know it's not a good thing happening, but still cheer for these kids in my country? Yeah, absolutely you can.
That's from Tim. I think you can do that, Tim. I think it's important to acknowledge it, though.
Nobody said you couldn't.
Yeah.
But I think there are some people that are going to be so aggressively into the, like, these kids did nothing wrong. I'm going even harder this year in cheering for Hockey Canada because you want to cheer it away. This isn't about one incident, guys. It is in some ways. I mean, it is about an incident that happened in 2018. But more to the point, and the big picture is that you've got a culture issue with Hockey Canada, maybe hockey in general. It doesn't mean that all hockey culture is bad. It doesn't mean that everything is going wrong with the sport. But you can acknowledge that things aren't perfect. Like, for example, I brought up the other day, I mentioned something about rugby culture because I'd read something about them addressing the drinking culture that they had in rugby. Someone got me on Twitter and was like, hey, you said that rugby has a bad culture. Since when? I'm like, I didn't say that. In fact, rugby has a terrific culture. It's a culture of camaraderie and sportsmanship. There are no better, there's no more sportsmanlike sport in my mind than rugby, which is hilarious because it's such a violent sport.
Yep.
But there is so much sportsmanship. You see it just with the respect that the officials are given, the respect that opponents are given. But there is a lot of drinking in the culture, and a lot of people are wondering, hey, is this keeping some potential athletes out that don't want to be part of that? Maybe for reasons, maybe for religious reasons, they don't want to be part of a drinking culture. Don't hear that and say that rugby's got a bad culture. I'm actually I played hockey my whole life. I've coached hockey. I would recommend every kid that wants to play hockey, like, go play hockey. It's awesome. It'll help you in life. But that means it's even more important that we fix the parts of the game that need to be fixed, because you want the kids, you want every kid that goes and plays hockey or is associated with the game to have a good experience. And when the kids aren't having a good experience, when there's a handful of kids that don't have a good experience because of hockey culture issues, then you got to fix the problem.
That's well said. We got lots more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Justin Bourne, as we continue the Justin Hour here on the Halford and Brough Show, Justin Bourne is going to join us as we will look around the NHL as we get closer to the NHL entry draft and the start of NHL free agency. The Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. On a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. They got it going on. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Three dealerships to serve you better. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. All right, do we have Bourne on the line? Let's go to the phone lines now. We haven't talked to our good buddy Justin Bourne in a while. We will remedy that now. Justin Bourne, Fan 590 in Toronto, joins us here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Bourne?
Not too much. How you guys doing?
We are well. We're in that weird holding pattern after the Stanley Cup has been handed out, yet before all the cool off-season stuff happens. So we're just kind of kicking some tires on some things, asking some friends about what they've been up to. I know that you and Kipper had the opportunity to speak to new Stanley Cup champion Nazem Kadri the other day. That must have been an interesting conversation. What did you guys kind of glean in the post Stanley Cup glow? I imagine that he might have been a bit sleepy eyed, but he also had a lot of things to say in the aftermath of winning that Stanley Cup. So, what was the conversation like?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was really good. Obviously, a big get by Kipper there. We recorded that at about 10 p.m. last night. Naz between drag races, it sounded like from the audio. But he was good. Kipper asked him about his comments about telling someone people who didn't believe in him to kiss his derriere. He basically just reiterated that, you know, he felt validated that people called him a liability, and he's proved that he's not. And a lot of great stuff talking about his hand, how they could only freeze like the upper portion because he still needed to feel the hockey stick with the lower portion, so still a lot of pain. I mean, just a really fascinating guy to talk to a couple days after winning the Stanley Cup.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because aside from the sort of redemptive arc and what he said and where everyone can kiss him, the other big story was that he managed to come back from a pretty significant injury to participate in the Stanley Cup final and score a very significant goal in that Stanley Cup final. There's been a big narrative over the last 24 hours about how many guys were playing so hurt, so banged up. The Tampa Bay Lightning laundry list of injuries was massive. Now, did he talk about the pressure to get back into the lineup and play? Not just an internalized pressure, like, I don't want to miss this, but also the one where it's like, I don't want to let my teammates down by not being there.
No, you know, he didn't specifically hit on that part. It's funny, we spent the first 15, 20 minutes on our show talking about that today, about, you know, hockey and the culture of it and where the pressure comes from guys to play. You know, he wanted to play. This guy has spent his whole life working to get to that point, right? The whole thing is a culmination of your life's work to be in those hockey games and try to reach that ultimate goal. So, you know, it sounded like this was, you know, what he went through to be a part of it and to accomplish that instead of sitting out and watching. So, you know, there's a lot every year around this time. There's the conversation about should hockey players play through this much, and, you know, how it's going to affect them later in their lives and what to do about it. But I don't know, guys, like, it's a physical sport. You can't play that much hockey not hurt. So your choice is to rest when you're hurt in hopes of not limping when you're 50, or you can accept that that's the lifestyle you've chosen and just do your best to be out there. I guess I'm a little bit of a Neanderthal on this, or maybe it's the hockey player in me. I get why guys want to play.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up, because I think this is an important thing to extrapolate out for the listeners, and we get a lot of comments in, and you see them on social media as well, where people say, like, it's not right that these guys are being pressured into playing under such physical ailments. And to Kadri's point, what you just brought up,
glorify it too.
Yeah. Right. But to Kadri, what you just brought up with Kadri's point was he was the one that wanted to play. Obviously, he wants to play in the Stanley
Do you remember
Cup
when we
final.
Had that conversation early in the series? And I was sitting there, I said they showed Kadri, and I guess he was sitting in the press box or a suite. And I was like, man, he must be dying inside not being able to play in these games.
Yeah, like, and that's an important thing to bring up, because you got to understand, and the listeners that are just tuning in right now, it's not about the club or the coach or the general manager or the teammate saying, oh, we got to get you out there. Like, obviously, Kadri wanted to go play. It's his childhood dream to do it. The question then becomes, whose responsibility is it to tap a guy on the shoulder and be like, maybe you shouldn't play today? Like, I know you want to get out there, but, you know, this is a professional sporting industry where Ronnie Lott once chopped off his pinky finger rather than have it in a cast, because if he doesn't have a pinky, he can still play. Like, guys will go to great lengths. I guess the question becomes, at what point does that internalized pressure become too much? And are you going to check a guy when he's not going to take no for an answer?
Oh, wait, did that happen? That's
yeah,
a real
Ronnie Lott right in 1986, April 1986, he amputated his pinky rather than have a broken pinky in a cast so he couldn't play football.
Okay, anyway, that's another level. You know, it's, imagine you spend your whole life, you're like, I'm going to climb Mount Everest. And then, you know, you get to 30 years old and you've been climbing it halfway and failing. And eventually you get 3% from the peak and everyone's like, you sit this one out because it's not going to be good for you later in your life. We're going to take your gear to the top so you can say you accomplished your goal. You know, it's like, well, I got to be there. I got to do this. Or I didn't do it. You know, that's part of the deal. And so, yeah, like, should there be someone who says, yeah, you can't, it's not good for you? I don't know. I don't think so. Like, for crying out loud, we talk so much about people trying, you know, being allowed to make their own decisions with themselves. And, you know, there shouldn't be anyone pressuring you to play. There shouldn't be a team saying you should play when you can't, or, you know, freezing something so that, you know, you're vulnerable to much worse injury or something like that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you gotta let people make their own choices for themselves. Miles wanted to play, won the Stanley Cup. I bet he doesn't care if he's not awesome at, you know, using a Rubik's Cube when he's retired.
Hey, Boren, when Kadri talked about, you know, not being a liability, did you ask any follow-up questions like, hey, Naz, you kind of were a liability, though. Like, three times. Three years in a row. Like, you know, the first time you're kind of like, well, it's unfair to call you a liability. The second time you're like, yeah, this guy might be a liability. The third time is like, you have become a liability, not just one team, but two teams. So I thought it was, listen, I thought the quote was hilarious. I was happy for Nazem Kadri in general, but I thought the quote was a little like, were you suggesting that you were perfect or something and that this was all just very unfair? You were suspended three times in the playoffs and you really hurt your team.
Can I tell you, there's a high school story of mine where, so person A keys the car of person B. Person B is very upset. They challenges them to a fight. After after school, they go out and there's a big fight. Person A, who keyed the person's car, knocks out person B, like knocks him cold. And he goes, who keyed your car now? It's like, you still did. You're still the guy who did it. You didn't not do that now because you knocked him out. That's how I feel about Kadri winning the cup. Like, you still are on the hook for the things you did, even if you feel slightly more validated at the end of the day.
What do you think the Leafs are going to do now in terms of the offseason? We've gone through, honestly, like, so many teams just on this show alone. We've talked about New Jersey and L.A. and Calgary, whether or not they're going to lose not only Johnny Gaudreau, but maybe be forced to trade Matthew Tkachuk if he doesn't want to sign long-term.
Pittsburgh.
We talked about Pittsburgh. We've mentioned the Canucks a few times. I think they might have a busy offseason. What about the Leafs, though? Here's the thing. They don't have a goalie. That seems important.
Yeah, they don't have a goalie, let alone many goalies, which would necessitate a goaltending tandem. Like, they don't got guys, so they got some decisions to make there. The Campbell thing is interesting. They haven't made him an offer. And it sounds like, to me, if you really wanted a guy, you would probably offer him money to play for your hockey team. So maybe they're not as high on him as you would have expected, or maybe this is just a tactic to say, you know, we don't think that there's a ton of money for you out there somewhere else, you know, and show Jack that, you know, when he goes to UFA that it's not there for him. I don't know. So that'll be the most important thing to decide is who's going to play goal for the team. And then, you know, is there something greater to be done? JT Miller is an interesting name that people in Toronto always salivate over. You know, is Toronto going to be content with their core? I don't know that they're going to do a whole ton. I feel like Kyle Dubas has seen good teams run back, you know, keep taking chances with the same core and good group and you'd be rewarded. So outside of the goaltender, I don't know. I don't believe that there's anything drastic that they have in mind, but I'm sure they'll be kicking tires like everyone else.
I only have to mention this because Jason's mentioned his name at least twice this week. Ilya Mikheyev, what the future have in hold for him?
A career in a different jersey, not a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey. Yeah, he's earned money. What a valuable player! Like, you know, a penalty killer, and you know he scored at a 30-goal pace this season. There's just not enough money for him, and he's the exact guy you pay, and then he doesn't score for the first 47 games of the season. Like he just feels like that type of player, shooting percentage variances and all that. So. I don't think he's going to be back. Maybe you want him in Vancouver. I don't know.
Well, the Canucks need to address their lack of speed. And I remember watching a Leafs game, and I kind of heard his name. And then I watched a few games, and I was like, this guy is a rocket out there. He's an unbelievable skater. So I think I tweeted something out about him, and then all the Leafs fans were like, yeah, he's had a bad injury. He has no finish, and that was 2 years ago. And I guess he found some finish this season, but also I having watched him a bit closer after noticing him the first time, I noticed that he did have a few tough plays in the postseason where there were just turnovers or just, I don't want to call them low hockey IQ plays, but not high hockey IQ plays. And I'm just wondering if he's one of those guys, like, can a coaching staff trust him?
Yeah, I think he's fairly trustworthy. Like, it's not that I think like, turnovers were a risk. It's just he doesn't have the poise with the puck to, like, hang on to it and find the next wave. Like, he's just going to, like, Michael Grabner or someone, or, like, a different version of Zach Hyman, where he's just going to go straight. He's going to try to shoot it. He's going to shoot for the rebound. He's going to try to get the rebound. And he's going to go to the bench and wait for his next shift. You know, like, Mitch Marner is the complete opposite player in Toronto, where he's thoughtful and crafty and patient and whatever. Mikheyev is just like, he's going to go fast and he's going to go straight, and you know what you're getting for the most part. So not a guy who's going to, you know, change your team's fundamental core or anything, but if you can add him to a good core, you like him as a piece like that.
Speaking of Justin Bourne from Sportsnet Fan 590 here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Bourne, the coaching carousel continues to spin across the National Hockey League. We're getting word now that we might get news on who's going to be the next head coach of the Bruins today. Sounds like David Quinn might be the guy there. Since we last spoke, a bunch of positions have been filled. One that has not was the biggest name, perhaps, Barry Trotz, not going to the Winnipeg Jets, announcing that he's going to stay on the sidelines for a while. You actually wrote about this. It's a really cool piece on paying for big-name coaches and questions about return on investment. Now, we've seen this offseason that we've had some of those big-name coaches recycled. I guess that's the right term we'll use here. We saw Peter DeBoer. We saw John Tortorella. What sort of conclusions did you draw when you dug into it a little bit more about getting the big-name, high-profile, experienced head coach and shelling out some bucks for him?
Well, you know, I just don't know that you're getting back what you're paying for. You know, there's not a salary cap. So one of the things I noted in the piece is, like, if you think Barry Trotz is 1% better than David Quinn and he costs you $5 million extra per season, it's not a good return on investment. However, if you think he's 1% better and there's no salary cap, what do you care? You got the guy who's 1% better, and, you know, that's just on your owner if he's willing to pay for that. You know, in some cases, though, where – you look at a guy like John Tortorella, it's like, who's he 1% better than as a coach? Like, you know, to be honest, I haven't seen it over the, you know, recent chunk of his career or in his analysis as a media member. So you're paying for the name and you're basically paying for what Daryl Sutter did. You think that he can come in and do that, and that's what the cost is. So I don't know. I see a lot of teams being like, let's throw money at a guy that people know. Where, you know, two of the longest tenured coaches in the league are John Cooper and Jared Bednar, who both came from the American Hockey League as first-time coaches and joined those organizations and figured it out with their groups. That, to me, might be the smarter play in the long term for cheaper.
Hey, Bourne, did you read Wish's article on Nathan MacKinnon?
No.
It was basically, I'm sure you've heard about Nathan MacKinnon's personality behind the scenes, and that he's a very competitive guy. He's hard on himself, but he's also really...
He passed him, man. Zadorov was all over him.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I've heard stories about things that he said to teammates either on the ice or off the ice, and he's just very blunt, and he can be mean, right, to his teammates, but, you know, there are some people that say, well, that's just him, that's being a leader. He's holding his teammates to account. He's not worrying about, you know, hurting feelings because he's got a goal, and the goal is to win the Stanley Cup, and the Avs just won the Stanley Cup. But the nuance in Wish's piece was that maybe he came to the realization that he needed to mellow a little bit and to be a little more even-tempered, to occasionally even maybe give guys a break. Where do you stand on that in terms of, I mean, I'm sure you've played or heard of or know some personalities in the game of hockey that might get a few HR violations along the way if they were in like a normal job.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, you know, I think it's like any line of work, you know, where it's good to have people who push you and good to have people who are competitive. Like it's all good, but there's just a certain tact you need to have or you're being crappy. You know, you're being a bad guy. And I think early in his career, it sounded like that was a struggle for him. I remember when I got named a captain in college, in the next freshman class that came in, I tried to be someone I wasn't and just a little harder nosed. And, you know, I don't know. It doesn't always work in the big picture. When you're with a group for a long time, I think it can be like a coach where you just wear out your welcome unless you're willing to make some concessions and cut people some slack and know when to push those buttons. So that's part of the leadership learning curve and why we value veteran players. You know, they have a better sense of when to push and when to pull back. And it sounds like his instinct is to push, push, push. And if he found a way to pull back a little bit, that speaks to experience. And to his credit, that's a hard thing to do when you're someone who's as emotional as he seems to be.
Yeah, it is funny that a lot of that stuff arose when Nathan MacKinnon was how old? What, like 22 or 23 years old? Think of some of the philosophies that you had in your life when you were that age and how sure you were of them, how sure you were that this was the right way. It was such a more black and white philosophy. I don't know about you but that was for me, but, and it kind of as life has moved on, I've realized, well, it's probably not black and white.
Yeah, no, that's the truth. It really is. And I don't know, maybe it speaks to all three of us getting older, but it's like looking back at some of your mid-20s, you used to, you know, in your mid-20s, like, I can't talk to someone who's a teenager. They're so immature. And now looking back, that age just keeps getting older. You're like, man, I still had no clue when I was in my early 20s. We'll say by your mid-20s, I think people started to figure it out. But yeah, 22, 23, there's still a lot of education going on how the world works.
Bourne, great stuff today, bud. Thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy the long weekend. Let's do this again as we get, you know, we'll do something in between the NHL draft and then the start of free agency. Let's do something then.
All right, guys. That sounds great. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks buddy. Bud. That's Justin Bourne, Sportsnet NHL analyst, Fan 590 here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Imagine if you had to hang out with yourself, being like, I don't know, early 20s.
Okay.
Would you like yourself?
Probably not.
Probably not?
Well, I wasn't like everyone is like kind of a jagoff at that age.
Or right? Would you roll your eyes at some of the things that you said? Yeah.
Yeah. I think I had a lot of really pretentious movie and music thoughts. I cared a lot more about things.
Did they insist upon themselves?
No, but it was just more like what he's talking about, like the eye rolling. You're like, all right,
okay,
we get that Cake's fashion nugget is a cultural icon. We get it. You don't have to keep hammering away at it. And I think like you know what? It's funny. Like I think the guilty pleasure thing is something that exists in that age range because there's certain things that you wouldn't be caught dead listening to. But if you do it on the sly, it's somehow ironic. Or, this is the only time I'd ever listen to this music is when I'm in a mood, that sort of thing. So, yeah, actually, you know what? I would have hated myself.
You've got kind of at that age, you've got almost like a big ego, where you really care what other people think about you
I think that's a big part of it, and you want to drive
forward this narrative about yourself, like this is the type of person I am, and you can deal with it or not, but yeah. That's who I am.
I think it's insufferable. No. I think it's a big part of it. And it's funny because we look at the modern athlete, and what's the one sort of common denominator is the peak and the star power. Now it's happening earlier and earlier in their career. So the heights of your athletic prowess are now kind of coinciding with a maturity level that you don't necessarily have because you don't have life experience.
Yeah.
It used to be guys would play their best and be as stars at 27, 28, 29. Henrik Sedin won the MVP of the NHL when he was 29 years old. Now guys are winning it when they're 23 and 24.
That's a challenge for the listeners that I'm going to put out there right there. What was something insufferable about your younger self? Let's have a few laughs at ourselves. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Murph is coming up next.